I just want to back up some and explain to you what the Jericho Movement is about. For those of you who attended the Jericho March in Washington, D.C. in 1998, we spent 18 months organizing nationally and internationally to build a march on Washington to demand recognition, amnesty, and freedom for our political prisoners. And that's in the United States at the time, there were over 150 political prisoners coming from a bunch of different movements. The Puerto Rican Independence Movement had about 15, 11 of which have been gone home since then. You had the Ohio Seven of the anti-imperialist movement. You had Panthers who've been in prison for over 30 years. Members of the Red Army faction who were captured in the United States, members of different organizations who were in exile in the U.S. And now in 2002, we have something known as the detainees, the immigration, INS detainees, people who have been picked up since 9/11 and disappeared. We used to talk a lot about the disappeared people in Central America and South America. The U.S. has thousands of disappeared people that people don't know where they are or anything happening inside the U.S. today. So the issue of political prisoners in the United States, I know you all know about the case of Lena Peltier, who was extradited to the U.S. and who's been in prison ever since, even though they know he didn't actually kill the FBI agent. They know people have come forward and confessed to it, and the government has said that they know that Leonard didn't pull the trigger, but since he knows who did it, he has to spend the rest of his life in prison. And this is the land of that talks about human rights violations all over the world, sanctions other countries, and in itself is one of the biggest violators of human rights. And the issue of these political prisoners in the world, it necessarily, because they said there is a democracy, because it said it holds itself out as the light, the candle of democracy to the rest of the world, there's no need for liberation struggles to go on in the U.S., and therefore there are no political prisoners. Everybody in prison is a criminal. They're there for criminal acts. But in history of the world, it's shown that who determines what's a crime is who's in power. The world redefines itself based on who's in power. When the United States government went to war against England, not the government, because it wasn't a government then, they were rebels fighting the U.S., England for its freedom. So the people who went, the Americans were called criminals by the England who was in power. So when they became, and they called their soldiers freedom fighters and revolutionaries. So now that they're in power, those nationals, those people who are fighting oppression inside the U.S., they're calling criminals, and we are what we are. We are revolutionaries, we're freedom fighters, and we are fighting for our freedom, and we're fighting against racism, we're fighting against imperialism, we're fighting against capitalism. But since we're in the United States and the right-wing people are in power, then we're criminals. So we don't allow ourselves to be called criminals. What we're fighting for is, one, in the international arena, the right to be given POW status, because we were involved in liberation struggles when captured. Some of us were, in fact, soldiers in liberation armies, like the Black Liberation Army, like the Armed Forces for National Liberation of Puerto Rico, like other armed bodies who are fighting actually combatants in the wars of liberation. What we are fighting for is the adequate medical care for our freedom fighters, the people in prison for political reasons. But in the last 3 years, since 1998, when we did the Jericho March, in March of 1998 in Pennsylvania, we had a woman who had been in prison for 20 years, a political prisoner, die from ovarian cancer. They said ovarian cancer. They notified her in the morning that she was sick and not to go to work, and she was dead by the next morning, but never any diagnosis prior to that. And then 2 years ago, in April of 2000, we had a brother, Albert Noel Washington, to die in prison of cancer. Last January, in 2001, we had another brother, Teddy Jaheef, to die in prison. Both of them having served over 25 years in prison. And the issue is inadequate medical care. If either one of them had been on the streets or allowed to get the medical care that people were offering to them, they may in fact have been alive today. We had a political prisoner whose name is Dr. Alan Berkman, and he was in prison. He had cancer twice. They sent him home, and he's been diagnosed terminal twice since he's been on the street, but with adequate Medicare, he's still alive and back to work today. So we know that if these people had gotten adequate medical care, they would be alive on the streets. And it's not because we were looking for the state to pay for the medical care. We were capable of doing it ourselves because we have doctors, physicians for social responsibility who were willing to do the work if they could have been accessed to the patients. So we're fighting for adequate medical care. We're fighting for legal representation. Following 911, I think we have to look at what they did with 9/9. They used the attack on the World Trade Center and the Pentagon as a reason to curtail a lot of legal access to attorneys for our political prisoners. And it didn't just happen to people who are of Arab descent. It happened to political people across the board inside the prisons in the United States. They cut off the access to attorneys. They cut off the access to families. They cut off the access to any kind of support they could get. We had to wage major struggles to get the lawyers to be able to access to them. And they finally caved in, and about a month ago, the last one, Richard Williams, was allowed access. And he was in Lompoc in California. People who they decided that were posed a threat, people, Muslims of Arab descent, are still in lockdown inside prisons inside the United States without access to attorneys. And they can't communicate with their families. And in the case of Sheikh Omar, he has been totally lost in the prison system, with no communication with anyone behind 911. And they're saying that, and his attorney recently and four other people were charged with terrorist acts. And so it's not just, the United States is making war inside and domestic war and covert operations, not just against the people inside prison, but the people who support the people in prison are being victimized behind 911. So there's a major reason for Jericho to be very active and doing what we need to do in order to build support for political prisons inside the United States. The vast melting pot that the United States talks about all the time it being is very clearly showing that it's not about the melting pot in the sense of who is allowed to do what. It's about the melting pot if you support the Bush administration. Not just the Bush administration, the goals of controlling the world on its imperialistic flag that the United States represents. So the Jericho movement, which I co-chair, is looking at building support not just for our black political prisoners or our Puerto Rican political prisoners or any other, but all political prisoners, because what happens to one of us, and if we don't build that support for political prisoners, what happens to one of us affects all of us. And so that one, well, it actually was one of the tenets of the Black Panther Party, that the only way we can stop oppression against black people in general is to deal with the issue of oppression to all people, all oppressed people, not just in the U.S., but around the world. We've been building. So right now we have two political prisoners who are going off of parole in July. Anthony Jaleel Bottom and Robert Seth Hayes, that we are working on the parole, building parole and getting people to support their parole campaigns. Both of them have been in prison over 1973, almost 30 years, you know, and both of them are serving life sentences. And they continue to say that they are not political prisoners. Both of them have cases of cat killing cases. Both of them are former members of Black Liberation Army and Black Panther Party. We also have issues, as I said before, and two of our people in the local chapters has worked with a group called DRUM. I think they've been doing workshops here around the issue of the detainees. And we've been doing a lot of work around that. I can't talk about political prisoners in one case, but the whole issue in and of itself. I know that we have some who have went up for parole and are waiting to have dates and are waiting to get out. But we've had issues where the parole board have said that people can go home and then it went to Washington, and Washington has overruled them, and their parole dates were taken down. A couple of years ago, I think in 1999, Veronica Bowers, who's another former Panther out of California, got approved for parole by the parole board. And then it went to the national office in Washington, D.C. for overseeing, and they took the parole date away. He even had a date, and they took it away. Right now, we have one person with a date set to go home in November, but we're not sure he's going to get home. So those are the kind of things we have to deal with. The brother who was supposed to come here today, Carlito, from the Vieques Support Committee, he also works with a group called Pro Libertad. And this group works with the Puerto Rican political prisoners. And one of the things that he that we know is that there's a brother who set to come home from prison May 20th. His name is Antonio Camacho Negron. He's a member of the Macheteros. He's being forced out of prison and being told he's going back to Puerto Rico. He comes out on a Monday. He's set to go to Puerto Rico on Tuesday. But they want him to come back every week to the parole board. And he has told them he's not coming back to the parole board. And so they forced him out of prison a couple of years ago and told him he could return to Pennsylvania from Puerto Rico every week to see the parole. And he told them no, he wasn't going to do that. So they forced him out anyhow, and he went. He went back to Puerto Rico and didn't parole. And he went about the work. He kept doing political work. And they finally... They went down, they violated his parole and went down to Puerto Rico and got it. But he had told him from the very beginning that there was no way. He's not Donald Trump, so he don't have the money to fly back and forth every week to see a parole board. It didn't make sense because they could have maxed him out in the whole nine yards, but they didn't do that. I talk fast, right? She's trying to translate. And then we heard that he wrote and said that they're forcing him out again. And they want him to come back to Pennsylvania every week to go to the parole board. And he's not going to do that. But then they told him that he didn't have to go to Puerto Rico to Pennsylvania every Tuesday, but he has to report to the mainland, Puerto Rico, the big city, when he lives in the countryside every week. And he still said he's not going to do that because as Puerto Ricans and as independistas, they don't recognize the United States' right to imprison them and all of that is, and he recognized their colonial status. So he's not going to abide by their rules. And I applaud him, the ability for him to take that stand. So he's coming out of prison anyhow, they're forcing him out. So he figures that he'll probably be out less than a week. But he's coming out, and we're giving a big party for him coming home. And he'll enjoy his time, and he's leaving for Puerto Rico the next day. But he'll get to get out for a minute. So it's that kind of situation where the politics of these brothers and sisters who are in prison, after all of these years, are still strong enough to fight, one, single-handedly against the U.S. government, because that's a fight that he's waging about his freedom on his own terms. And he's still willing to take those kind of stands. But so as the Jericho movement, we support the rights of the political prisoners to determine how they do their time, what they do, and what they do about going to the parole board or not going to the parole board. We still have five Puerto Ricans, independistas, in prison. Heidi Beltran, who's doing 60-some years, who actually was one of the ones that was not offered a deal when the Clinton administration was in offer. Oscar Lopez Rivera. We have Alberto Torres and Juan Seguero Palma. Puerto Ricans are still in prison. And every day, more and more are going to jail in Vieques behind the United States bombardment of the island of Vieques in Puerto Rico. So you have at least 30 who are in jail for violating the ban against demonstrations in Puerto Rico and U.S. naval space there. So you're going to have more as it escalates because the people of Vieques are continuously involved in that struggle. You have inside U.S., Dr. Jose Solis is actually being moved from Coleman, Florida to Puerto Rico to go to the halfway house. So So there's movement in some quarters around the whole issue. And I have to say I admire the support and backing that the Puerto Rican community has given to the Puerto Rican political prisoners. And that in two times in my lifetime, we've had Puerto Rican independentistas given amnesty and from prison. And that's behind the struggle. But that kind of struggle, that kind of support is needed to for all political prisoners to bring them home. In the last year, we've seen Laura Whitehorn and Susan Rosenberg and Linda Evans come home in the U.S. But one of the things that we have to say that we have not seen any members of the Black Panther Party or the Black Liberation Movement or the Black Liberation come home except through dying in prison. So there is a vast need for support for that camp of prison people who have been prisoned inside the United States. There's another person who does not get a lot of support, and his name is Yuki Kamara. He's a Japanese in prison in the U.S. The issue at the time that he was arrested, he was stopped, and he was arrested in New Jersey, and his car was illegally searched, and he was incarcerated. They said that what he was incarcerated for should have gotten him a maximum of 10 years in prison. He received 30. He's being kept in ADMAX in Florida, and he gets no visits because he's only allowed to see his family. And his family is in Tokyo, Japan. He gets no phone calls because he can only talk to his family. And he's not, and now, right now, they're going through this thing of not allowing people to talk in any language except English over the phones. His family does not speak English. So we have a situation where he is being totally isolated, and he writes and he supports all those other political prisoners and all the work that we do, and he's very, very forthcoming to find that in a situation that he's in, he supports Mumia Abu-Jamal, who's in death row in Pennsylvania, and he supports Leonard Peltier, and he supports all the work, and he writes voraciously in support of political prisoners around the country and the issues that affect people, and people don't know about him. You know, we have Eddie Conway in Baltimore, and one of the ones that I talk about a lot and I like is David Gilbert. David Gilbert was one of the Brinks conspiracy people, and he was given a sentence of 80 years to life, 80. And then the other day, when Noah Washington was dying in prison, I met David Gilbert, and he was such a nice guy, and the way he supported Noah, and the way he looked after him when he couldn't walk, and he was in a wheelchair, and everything was the humanity that he showed was kind of emotional to watch. It was kind of, it made you realize what you were struggling for and who you were struggling with, that these were real people with real hearts and full of that quality. And then I went home, and you know, because you on the computers, you can go in inmate locators, and I looked him up to see when his parole eligibility date, because we was working on putting literature out on all the political prisoners, how much time they got and what kind of eligibility dates for parole, and when he could possibly come home. And I found out that he didn't go for parole till 2056. 2056. And when I looked at that date, I said to myself, whoa, I'll be 106 when he goes up for parole. You know, I didn't think I'd be dead, but I thought at least I'd be 106. But it just didn't make any... It just didn't make it... It wasn't real. It's an Alice in Wonderland number. You know? And how someone could give out a sentence that a person doesn't see a parole board to 2056 didn't make any sense. And then when I equated that with the way that David Gilbert responded to Noah's situation when he's dying in prison and how caring he was and how sharing that he was around this issue, made me do that much more and admire him that much more for being able to still care about what's happening to somebody else when you're looking at a date of 2056. You know, and that's what we're dealing with the issue of political prisoners inside the United States. People don't really believe that they exist because this is the United States and they couldn't possibly have political prisoners. But, you know, and cases where the government would manufacture evidence against people, where they would doctor documents. They would remove fingerprints from one place to put them to another one to build the evidence against people. But you know, we all thought that only happened in Mission Impossible. You know, that because that's what they did in the old TV show Mission Impossible. It was that they create scenarios and then they build the evidence to support the scenario. But in a lot of cases of our political prisoners, they first they make the charge, then they build the evidence, and they create the evidence to support them. So, if you want to know, so I'm going to stop talking, but if you don't want to know more about the political prisons inside the U.S., that's how you can contact us. If you want to make, set up speaking engagements for other people in the Jericho, you can do that. Our website has all that information on it. And we have literature over here on the table, this little table there. And after we leave this room, it's going to be downstairs again in the literature tables. And if you have any questions, we have an email address also. And on that website, you can find the names and addresses of all the political prisoners. And we're going to be putting up more, changing as the addresses change, they will be there. So thank you for listening.